Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Alison Bechdel's new book, Spent, is a return to fiction, a semi-autobiographical romp, as she calls it, where she transforms her rural Vermont life into self-parody. Our protagonist, also named Alison Bechdel, tends a pygmy goat sanctuary with her wife, Holly. Alison Bechdel's cult following began with her early comic strip Dykes to Watch Out For and expanded with the New York Times best-selling graphic memoir Fun Home, adapted into a Tony Award-winning musical. Again, her latest is Spent, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Alison Bechdel to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
I'm very happy to be here.
At what point did this book become a comic novel, and I guess it's fair to ask, what exactly does that mean?
I've always loved the idea of comic novels, you know, a novel that's kind of light and frothy and entertaining. But of course, in this case, it has a double meaning of it's actually a comic book. It's told in graphic narrative. But it didn't originally start out to be a novel, to be fiction. I've kind of become known as a memoirist since I published a memoir about my father called Fun Home some years ago. And I've really liked working in the genre of memoir and mining my real life for stories. And this was going to be a memoir about money at this, you know, crazy juncture that we find ourselves at in human history, where money is just has just kind of ruined so many things. So I was going to write a memoir about my relationship to money, about living in a capitalist system and what to do about that. But that seemed a little beyond my scope. When I sat down to actually start it, I realized, oh my God, I'm going to have to read Marx and all kinds of other economic texts, which I really am not that interested in. So at that point, it kind of turned into a story about a cartoonist named Alison Bechdel who was trying to write a memoir about money, which I found much more engaging and interesting.
And obviously there are parallels. So instead of Fun Home, this is the character Alison is known for death and taxidermy. And instead of it being a very successful Broadway musical, it is a success on a streaming service, and it's a series. And what I found fascinating is Alison's reaction to the show itself, which is sort of where you become detached from it. And I'm interested in what that was like for you to say, okay, well, in this fictionalization, my character of Alison is watching this in sort of horror.
It's kind of a riff on what happens when an artist or a writer gets their book adapted into some other format. And in my real life case, Fun Home got adapted into a Broadway musical, and a really good Broadway musical. I was very fortunate that it turned out as well as it did. The creative team was just amazing and made a really beautiful work of art, a sort of parallel work of art to mine. It's a good adaptation, but it's its own separate thing. So I was sort of playing in this book, what if that hadn't gone so well? I did sign away all my creative, you know, rights to be involved with the musical. What if the team hadn't been so responsible and so skilled? So in this case, Alison's memoir has just been contorted past all recognition. They're just adding dragons to it and gratuitous sex scenes, and she's very upset to see what's become of her life's work.
And obviously, you don't have to go very far to find an artist, to find an author who doesn't feel that way about what Hollywood has done to their work.
Yes, but everyone keeps selling their books to Hollywood, don't they?
And that's because the money comes first, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what happens in this book. Alison is making this choice. She can either publish her next book with a giant media conglomerate that has like destroyed democracy for a lot of money, or she can sell it to a tiny small press, which won't make her much money at all. So She opts for the former.
When it comes to the setting of the characters of where they are, obviously still living in Vermont and living a really a rather progressive life in a time that is in peril, which obviously certainly rings true, doesn't it?
Yeah. One thing that is not at all fictional about this book is the way it is tracking with the present moment and the, you know, all the dangerous signs of a crumbling democracy that have been happening for years now.
And the book takes place prior to the most recent election, and yet there's still this sense of, well, for want of a better term, doom.
Yes. Yeah. Allison is very much a doomer. And that's something I explore in the book. Like, she feels doomed because she's also paralyzed. She doesn't know what to do, how to work against this. She feels like somehow she has to solve everything, and she's going to do it by writing this memoir about money, and then she's going to do it by starting a reality television show about how to live ethically under capitalism. She's just like flailing. But she lives with her partner, Holly. And like my real life partner, Holly in the book is this very optimistic, sunny presence. Even when things are dark, she is able to find joy, able to be in the moment. She's connecting with other people. She's making things with her hands, as opposed to Allison, who's kind of doom scrolling on her computer all day.
Alison Bechdel is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the new book is Spent, a comic novel. Holly is operating as you just described, but then goes viral for a wood chopping video. At that point, we see Allison have some real envy looking at her partner, saying, "Well, what is going on here?"
Yeah, Allison's used to being like the famous person in this relationship. People identify her at the co-op and complain to her about the TV show, and she feels very visible in the world. And she's even deciding that maybe she's just going to wear a mask all the time, even after COVID ends, so people won't recognize her. And then Holly goes viral, and everyone starts recognizing her, and Holly loves it. She really enjoys her celebrity. We did this wood chopping video that went viral, and now her YouTube channel, where she posts power tool reviews and everything, has just gotten all these subscribers. Then Holly gets kind of caught up in the rat race of creative content production, and she gets burned out eventually too, just like Allison.
A moment of just staring at the phone, wondering how do I get more likes, and what do I need to do
Yeah.
to feed this this beast. I'm very curious also in the community, the characters that you've brought together for this friend group for both you and Holly. They live communally. It's a good group of folks. They're all fascinating and quirky, and it makes for just interesting reading, obviously, but also conversation to see what these characters are up to and what they do.
Yeah, those characters, this group household of Stewart and Sparrow and Lois and Ginger, they're actually my old comic strip characters from Dykes to Watch Out For, which no one needs to know. If you get that, great. If you don't, it doesn't matter. But for me, it was like reuniting with these old friends who I had written about and, you know, developed over decades. And it was really fun to realize, oh my God, those people are so wonderful. I can use them. I can bring them back. These are going to be my friends in this new auto-fictional world. And that was really fun. Holly and I go over to their house to watch the television show. They come out to our farm to visit the goats. It was just really cool to connect with them again. And I always use those characters as a way of figuring out what was going on in the world. I'd have them all discussing things and taking different points of view and sort of debating things in the comic strip. And I was able to do that again, bring these people back and have them talking about what's going on now and what are we going to do about it.
What I thought was really cool about that is in these characters' age, so they're now middle-aged, and they have a much different perspective, and have a perspective, and it's very funny because it's looking at them now in this very weird world that we live in.
Yeah, they're all in their 60s now, like me, and it was fun to play with the next generation. Stuart and Sparrow have a kid, JR, who has just dropped out of Oberlin College, very disillusioned with the education system, wants to become an activist, and does. And we follow the antics of JR and their friend Badger as they do the same kind of work their parents and this older cadre of people have been doing, but in a new, younger, more idealistic way.
The way they live, I mean, they're still exploring. They're still trying new things. They want to examine life and see ways that they can improve upon their situation and enjoy life more.
Yeah, the kids are I mean, all these characters are dedicated to creating a better world. That's what they do. That's what they care most about. As a sort of side effect of that, they're creating this wonderful, vibrant community of like-minded people. But the kids, they don't have to worry yet about all the material concerns that the adults do, and so they're able to be more radical. They stage a climate protest at the St. Johnsbury Museum, the Fairbanks Museum, with all the taxidermy displays. They pitch in to the recovery effort after all the terrible flooding we had in Vermont those 2 summers in a row. So they're very, very attuned to the climate crisis, among other things.
What brought you to a goat farm?
I don't know. I don't have any goats. Holly says we can absolutely never get any goats. She doesn't like goats. I think they're cute. My grandfather was a goat herd as a boy, so I feel like I have some kind of like connection to goats. And Holly also herded goats as a kid growing up in Addison County. So I felt like we had some kind of organic connection, even if we don't really have goats. And I don't know. They're cute. They're cute and fun to draw.
And you get to do a goat sex scene. That's not
Oh my
bad.
goodness. Yeah. Yeah, there's some sex in this book, a little some animal and some human.
Is there any trepidation in doing that, or does it just come naturally and you're like, okay, it's another day?
I don't feel trepidation about it. That's always kind of been part of my beat, not because I'm like a big sex activist. I'm quite modest and shy, but being a queer person in this culture, like it's our sexuality that has defined us and become an issue for people. So I feel like it's incumbent on me to kind of demystify that and just show lesbians having sex, and it's not a big deal. It's like anyone having sex. So it's always been something I do. And in this case, it was really fun to show older people and their aging bodies as they pursue these antics.
There's one panel where you say that was really nice. I love our sexual routine. And Holly just says, routine.
Yeah, she's falling asleep.
Yes. That's a very 60-ish thing, isn't it?
Yes, if one is lucky.
If one is lucky, that's right. When you look at how the characters react to each other and operate as a group, at what point did you find your footing, I guess, as you're going through and say, I'm still going to get my points out about money, about all of these other things, but I'm still going to stay true to the type of work that I'm known for and that I do.
Well, honestly, I just got caught up in the story, this sort of light, frothy story about this unusual relationship, this established couple getting involved with another person and forming a throuple. So venturing into polyamory turf, enjoy writing about people and their relationships and their daily lives and routines. And the money stuff is still in there, but it's kind of got this sugar coating of this little rom-com.
I know you must be asked this a billion times, and I apologize for piling on, but is it the story that comes first or the art?
Well, in this case, I was familiar with these characters and their world, so I knew what I was going to be drawing. I didn't have to like, well, actually, that's a lie. I had to figure out the farm because I don't really live on a farm. So I made a papier-mâché model of what this farmstead would look like kind of like a child's farm set. It was really fun. Like, here's where the barn goes, here's the silo, here's the house, here's where the goat pen is. And then I could use that to imagine how these scenes were going to play out. But I do essentially write first. I have to figure out the story and where it's going to go before I can start making pictures.
One of the things that I loved in this book is Allison is giving a introduction to a panel for a banned book panel and preparing and ultimately over preparing. I can just, I mean, obviously, I would assume you've been in many of these positions where you're speaking and you're thinking, okay, is this going well? Is this not going well? How is this working out?
Yeah, it's funny because I actually did give a talk at the Green Mountain Book Festival in Burlington in Kontoise Auditorium in City Hall in Burlington, just as Allison is giving her talk in the book. And it was just a funny overlap of reality and fiction. The night I gave the talk, it was long before I'd gotten to the point in the book where I was drawing this, but I took a lot of reference shots so I could get the stage right and the architecture of the room. My talk in real life actually went much better than Allison's did in the book. She kind of flops, honestly.
Yes. But there's also this part of it, and this runs through the book a bit. We're coming out of the pandemic. People are starting to congregate again. And there's obviously fatigue, mass fatigue, and just fatigue of being locked up for so long.
I know that some people are just don't want to read about COVID. They're done with it. They don't want it in their books or their movies that they're watching. But I felt like it was somehow important to remember the texture of life during that crazy period. So yeah, people are, testing before they hang out in a group. At one point, the whole group household comes down with COVID and no one can go to visit them. And it was just kind of interesting to remember those times and, show the little COVID test kits that everyone's fumbling with all the time. The masks. Oh my God, the masks.
When you're not working on a project like this, are you still drawing every day?
No, and I wish I was. I have a lot of other stuff I have to do. It's crazy. I've always regretted that. I don't have a good daily drawing process. I've gone in and out of doing it, but sometimes I just get so busy. It's weird being a cartoonist. You have all these different hats you have to wear. And right now, of course, I'm in book tour mode and doing a lot
Right.
of talking about my work, which is, I don't know, language is not my first language. I would rather be drawing.
Can you imagine living through the time that we're living through and not living in Vermont?
No, I can't. And this story is very much a love letter to Vermont. I mean, I
Yeah.
know, Vermont is not immune to issues that everyone has, but there is a real strong progressivism at work there that is, I don't know, really salvational for me personally, and I think for lots of people.
There's acceptance of a lot of different things, isn't there?
Yeah, and especially as, events unfold, there's this increasing red state, blue state polarization going on. There's like trans families moving to Vermont in the book. Sparrow is working to preserve abortion rights in the state.
You have Becca Ballant.
Yes, Becca makes a cameo. Bernie shows up at the farmer's market. Even Bill McKibben comes by to be on a podcast with the young people. So it was really fun to do that, have real people worked into the story.
How much did you realize of what was going on with Fun Home? Meaning, Did you dip into that and say, okay, this is happening, and then be able to just go home and say, I don't, I'm done now, or were you able, or were you fully immersed?
You mean with the musical?
Yeah, as far as the success of it, and as it takes off and becomes, you know, really has a life of its own.
It was actually sort of slightly disruptive in my life. Not in a bad way. Obviously, it was an amazing thing to have happen, but it took up a lot of energy and bandwidth to be, engaged in that. Although I wasn't working on the creative part of it, there was a lot of publicity. There was just a lot of interviews and events and things that I was called on to do. And I enjoyed all that, but it really took me away from having the kind of focus I need to produce new work. So, and this is something Allison in the book suffers from too. She's really got some kind of attention deficit disorder as she's struggling to get one project done and distracting herself by working on another project ad infinitum.
A reality show,
Yes, she wants to sell a reality TV show.
which I don't know you terrifically well, but I wouldn't think that would be something you would at all be interested
No, I actually hate reality TV. Unless you count things like the Great British Baking Show. I do love
Sure,
that.
yeah, but in this case, that's not what this is, and I guess the opportunities that are available to this character of Allison and to yourself of what people pitch you and what people are interested in, that must be interesting to explore as well.
Yeah, I mean, I actually did pitch a TV show in Hollywood, and I was able to draw on that experience to draw Allison riding around in a Tesla and pitching her idea over and over again to these people who seem so enthusiastic and so upbeat about her show. But of course, no one really wants to produce it in the end.
And what was that show about?
What was my real life show about?
Yes.
Oh, I've been trying forever to get a. And like an animated version of Dykes to Watch Out For,
Yeah.
out into the world. It's looking like that might not be happening soon, but who knows?
And do you have a sense of why that is?
Well, I mean, why it is now is because of this incredible rightward shift that everyone is going through. But I think historically, they're just, I mean, it's just too much of a niche audience, I think. I mean, that's something
Yeah.
Alice talks about in this book too. She misses television in the old days when everyone was watching the same shows together. Everyone was watching Mary Tyler Moore. And now it's like there's a million channels with wonderful content, but five or six people watching each of these streams. So she's nostalgic for that mass audience, and she's convinced she's going to reach it with her capitalist makeover show.
Do you think that there, as for cartoonists, and even especially young cartoonists, that there are opportunities and good opportunities for them to do the type of work that you have done or the type of work that they want to do?
Oh, there's always opportunities, and young people will always find a way to get their ideas and voices out. Everything's just co constantly in churn, and young people are doing great stuff. I hope they will keep cranking it out.
When you're working on a panel, when you're working on a particular scene of, I'm interested in how hard you work on the timing, the comedic timing of it to make it work, where you look and say, okay, that's, here's the setup, here's the delivery, and there we go. And how much, I assume that takes a lot of time to figure that out.
It does, but that's the fun of it. I map the story out. I know what I want to have happen in a scene. But then it's a matter of making that happen. And sometimes I feel like the bulk of what I'm doing is just graphic design, like getting the particular characters into this box and the words they need to be saying, fitting those things in so that the words fall where you need to read them, so they're not out of order. It's kind of, in some ways, very rudimentary, just blocking these stories out. But then you have to somehow bring it to life, and that's something that happens with their gestures and their expressions. And as I'm making the drawing, all of that sort of starts to fall into place. But speaking of timing, I mean, timing is not, it's when you're drawing a comic book, yeah, of course there is timing, but it's not anything like what a time-based medium would involve. And I've been adapting this book into an audiobook so that actors can read it. And that really made me very attuned to questions of comic timing. And I'm still working on tweaking those little interactions because it makes so much difference. Yeah, just a little beat will make a joke work.
What made me think of that, well, in reading and making that a question was there's several times where you have just this classic double take where the character's head is to the right, to the left, to the
Yeah,
right.
swiveling.
Yes, that does a lot for a scene, it seems.
Yeah, it does. And also it's just I don't know, it's a way to get motion into a static image, and it's a way to, I don't know, like build time into the image. Like this within the time that this panel happens, the character is looking over here and then they're looking over here. It
Right.
just gives a richness to what you're doing.
And also the overall, sometimes we just, it's things are happening so fast we don't know where to look.
Right. Yeah, things happen simultaneously.
The name of the new book is Spent, a comic novel. It is published by Mariner. Alison Bechtel, an absolute delight to speak to you. I thank you so much for spending time with us, and I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you so much.
Alison Bechtel's latest is Spent, a comic novel. It is published by Mariner. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.